Welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lebel. Clearly, this is a case of unfinished business. The international dirty proxy war against Syria has been reignited. On this edition of the program, we examine why this is happening, the actors involved, and who benefits. Crosstalking Syria, I'm joined by my guest, Kovarik Amazan in Berlin. He is founder of Syriana Analysis. In Beirut, we have Ali Risk. He is a security and political affairs analyst. And in Latakia, we cross to Stephen Sihini. He's an award-winning journalist and chief editor of Mideast Discourse. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, start out in Berlin. Kovarik, we had Jake Sullivan come out in the last news cycle saying that the U.S. won't cry about the pressure Syria is facing from an al-Qaeda-linked group, the HTS here. Of course, he didn't use the word al-Qaeda. He just said opposition to the government in Damascus. What is your take on this? I mean, there's so many moving pieces. We have Erdogan apparently has signed off on this, signing away the entire Astana process that the Russians put so much time into. We obviously know there is an Israeli hand in here because of the timing of it immediately after the ceasefire or truce in Lebanon. This is unfinished business, as I said in my introduction. Go ahead.
Exactly, Peter. I just want to mention a few things first about Jake Sullivan. Jake Sullivan sent an email to Hillary Clinton in February 2012 saying that al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. The former special envoy of the U.S., James Jeffrey, said to PBS that Jolani's gang has been an asset for U.S. strategy in Syria. So putting this into context in the current circumstances in the region, this attack came with the direct participation of the Turkish intelligence. They have unleashed this army of terrorists basically against Aleppo because they found this as a perfect timing and there was a mutual ground between them and Israel in the region. For Erdogan, he is preparing for the transitional period. Trump is coming to the region, also to the presidency, and he wants to impose certain compromises also in Syria. So he is trying to solidify his position on the negotiation table and having better cards for the future compromises or settlements in the region. At the same time, when the ceasefire agreement has been allegedly, let's say, enforced in Lebanon, the Israelis and the Americans sent messages to Damascus that they have to participate in this ceasefire agreement by imposing a siege on Hezbollah in order to degrade the strength of Hezbollah militarily and politically. And Assad rejected that. Therefore, this attack came at the perfect time to exert pressure on Assad to accept in participating in the siege on Hezbollah. And if you follow the pattern of the advances of the militants from Idlib to Hama, and they were intending on going to Homs, they wanted to create a belt of a siege, a militant siege on Lebanon, something that the Americans cannot do by themselves, or the Brits, or the Israelis. So they used these proxies, and this was the mutual ground. The Americans, the Turks, and the Israelis came to the same conclusion. So they came in once again restarting this regime change war once again in Syria.
Well, Ali, I mean, if it is a continuation of the dirty proxy war that started in 2007, I seem to remember very clearly that one of the aims, maybe the primary aim, was not only removing Assad from power in Damascus, but to partition Syria into different statelets, little statelets that could be easily controlled and manipulated from the outside. I mean, Kovarik is talking about this belt, and that makes perfect sense to me. But is that a permanent or semi-permanent solution to the problems that particularly like the Turks see? And of course, Israel wants to have Hezbollah cut off from Syria and thus Iran. I mean, what is the goal here? I mean, I understand what's going on, but what's the duration and who's going to enforce this new reality, if this even new reality is going to stick? Go ahead.
I'm not sure that you can articulate a clear goal because there are so many parties and each one has a different agenda. Turkey, for example, wants to expand its own influence in Syria via the Muslim Brotherhood. Israel's focus is on curbing Iranian influence, on countering Hezbollah. Now, the U.S. in particular, I think it's in a bind. It's not a situation which I envy at all for the United States. The U.S. designates HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, formerly al-Nusra, as a terrorist organization. So if it were to openly support what is taking place, that would expose the United States as being very hypocritical. And this same scenario, by the way, played out in 2011 or after 2011, when the Obama administration spoke about the necessity of President Assad to leave power. At the same time, you know, Washington was saying al-Nusra is a terrorist organization, and al-Nusra was fighting against the Syrian government. So you have a very complicated picture. In my view, I think that there are certain parties who do want President Bashar al-Assad to leave power. And I think that Israel comes at the top of that list due to the fact that President Assad has resisted all the efforts to break off from Iran. And it's interesting that these developments take place after Netanyahu had said that one of the goals behind stopping the confrontations in Lebanon was to dedicate more resources to countering Iran. And I think what's taking place in Syria can't be separated from that. I'll also point out the fact that it's been documented that the Israelis have coordinated operationally with these armed groups, including al-Nusra. So I believe that Washington will be wise to slightly distance itself from an Israeli agenda, which in the end, I think, will undermine U.S. interest. Now, I'm, you know, fairly somewhat optimistic that when Trump comes to power, he might not take the situation so easily, like Jake Sullivan is saying, we won't cry about what is taking place. There might be a more American-first approach, if you would like, in dealing with these events.
Well, Stephen, if there were an American-first agenda, then first the American troops would leave Syria, which they're there illegally under international law. You know, we've always kind of prioritized the Israelis basically calling the shots, of course, using proxies. And that major proxy in this case is Turkey. Turkey has made a major, if not fatal, decision. I mean, it didn't make any real friends doing this. And Erdogan himself, after all of his bluster about the Palestinians and the genocide in Gaza, I mean, he looks more than a hypocrite in my eyes. Go ahead, Stephen.
Erdogan, first of all, Erdogan, he is the number one cause of what's happening in Syria, and he had a role in the war on Syria since 2011. But what's happening today, he ruined his image, and he cut all, in my opinion, he cut all ties. He, like, there's no hope to, the relationship will never come back. And especially like today, you're seeing, everyone knows that these terrorists are backed by Turkey. On the other hand.
Okay, it looks like we have a small problem with Stephen. Can you react to that? I mean, Turkey's role in all of this, because it's kind of burned bridges. I mean, I think the person that was most angry about all of this, besides the people that are victims of this terrorist organization, is Vladimir Putin. He invested a lot in that relationship.
Exactly. I think what Erdogan has done terrified everyone in the region, including also Russia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, the UAE. In 2011, 2012, most of these Arabic countries were in support of what they called the rebels. Now they say they support the Syrian army against terrorism. In 2011, 2012, they kicked Syria out of the Arab League. They cut ties. They imposed embargo on Syria in every shape and form. Now they say they're supporting Damascus against terrorism. The reason for that is Erdogan has made a bold decision to go into Syria and occupy large swath of territories. And if he manages or succeeds in Syria, he could pose a threat on other neighboring countries, especially Jordan, because the Israelis are trying to create an alternative state for the Palestinians in Jordan. So if he moves in Syria in coordination with the Israelis, like he is doing at the current moment, this could pose a threat on the Saudis and the Jordanians and the rest, who see Turkey as a rival since the days of the Ottoman Empire. empire. So if he manages in Syria, he could impose his hegemony on the rest of the Arab world, something that nobody wants to see except for Qatar.
Well, I mean, Ali, exactly. I mean, you know, Erdogan may have these ambitions, but I don't see anybody really on board to see these ideas come to. This is the neo-Ottomanism, isn't it?
Indeed. I think Kevorg raised some very important points. The certain Arab Gulf countries, which used to be on board in the attempts to oust President Assad, no longer are. First and foremost, the United Arab Emirates, to a lesser degree, Saudi Arabia. So there are a lot less players who are willing to become involved in such adventures. And I think this is something which you also have to factor in, by the way, when you anticipate what Trump is going to do, because it's well known that Trump has very good ties with these Arab states, like Saudi Arabia, like the UAE, like other countries. So with that in mind, how far is Trump going to go in supporting any adventures, any Turkish-led or Israeli-led adventures in Syria? I myself, I don't think that he's necessarily going to be that enthusiastic regarding pursuing such plans. And I think that you're probably not going to see a repetition of what you saw during the Obama administration when Obama said President Assad has to leave. I think this time it's going to differ somewhat for reasons related to the lack of allies compared to before, and also for other reasons, I think, related to Donald Trump's own personal approach or sentiments. Remember what he used to say in his first term about fighting radical Islamic terror, he used to call it, between quotations. Now, regardless of my reservations of using such terminology, but he does appear to realize the danger in supporting such groups and how that could backfire against U.S. interests as a whole.
Well, Ali, we're almost to the break, but I mean, there's a theory in Washington his political opposition just wants to create more and more problems for Trump as he comes into office. Do you think there's an element of that, or this is just an extension of the regionalization of the conflict?
I think that can't be ruled out. I think it's quite possible there is an element because from what I see, Biden is trying to also sabotage Trump's efforts regarding Russia. Look at what he's doing in Ukraine, how he's providing them with weapons. So with that in mind, I think you can't rule out that he's going to do the same thing or might be involved in the same kinds of attempts also in Syria. Incidentally, you mentioned the issue of the U.S. withdrawing its troops. According to Robert Kennedy, who was one of the members of the cabinet.
Ali, I have to go to a hard break right here. Gentlemen, we're going to go to a hard break, and after that break, we'll continue our discussion on Syria. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Syria. I want to go back to Ali. Before we went to the break, you were making a point about the illegal occupation of American troops in Syria. Go ahead.
Yes, I was saying that if you look at the statements made by senior aides to President-elect Trump, like Robert Kennedy, who is one of those senior aides, he said that Trump is seriously considering a withdrawal from Syria. So, you know, these might be attempts by Biden, by the deep state, in order to keep America in one way or another involved within the Syrian.
And Ali also, and before I go to Steve here, it also can be a test of how much sway Netanyahu has over Trump. That might be his first test. Are you going to go along with this? Okay. I mean, that's going to be very interesting, and that's not going to go down very well with Trump's base, but we're not there yet. We're not in January. You know, Steve, you know, it's already been mentioned here. I mean, this is also a gambit, clearly, against Iran and clearly against Russia, because at first blush, the first reaction that we got from think Tankistan, as I call it, is that the Russians are preoccupied, the Iranians are preoccupied. This is an opportunity, and Erdogan is the greatest opportunist of all time. Go ahead, Stephen.
This is not about Syrian military and the opposition. This from day one, from the first second this attack happened, occupying Aleppo from these bloodthirsty terrorists, it is an intelligent war. From one side, it's the Americans, Israeli, Ukrainians, and Turkish. From one side, a war against the Syrian army, the Syrian government, Russia, and Iranian. So it is actually, you can say, a small world war, but it's happening on inside of the Syrian land. And this will not end until, it cannot be end militarily, it has to end politically. And I see the only way to, this situation is going to continue until January 20, because I do not see Trump wanting to spend the taxpayer money to support and pay these bloodthirsty terrorists. At the same time, the Arabs, the rich Arab countries, they don't want any danger and they don't want anything that will affect their countries. So also they will pressure the United States to put an end to all of this madness that Biden and Erdogan started.
Well, yeah, Kabark, we're going to find out. We know that Trump was rolled during his first administration. Syria is a very important example. He told Erdogan, sure, the troops will leave. And then, of course, his own people blockaded him. We're going to find out if that's going to happen again. But, you know, we do have statements coming out of capitals in the region here. And I remember very famously, Tehran said that they would not allow Damascus to fall. I heard that again in the last news cycle. What does that mean in the context of 2024 going into 2025?
Actually, the front lines and the red lines have been set by Damascus, Iran, and Moscow at the current moment. It is going to be northern Hama. The militants cannot move forward from northern Hama to Hama or occupy Homs because they want to now foil the strategic, result or the hope of the goal of this attack, and that is to occupy Homs and encircle Lebanon. And each side, Moscow, Damascus, and Iran, they all have different, interests, but they have mutual ground in this. In my opinion, it is going to be very, very difficult now for the Syrian army to move forward from Hama to Aleppo because the Americans are determined also to open a second front now from the south in Horan, where near Daraa, where the militants have joined the reconciliation process and they are managing their own affairs there and they still have weapons in their hands. And they have issued a statement that they're going to march to Damascus. So Syrian army is overstretched. It has to protect Damascus, which is the strategic place. They have to protect the capital, and at the same time, they have to protect the red line, and that is Hama. Therefore, with the arrival of the Iraqi and Lebanese and other soldiers to Syria, it is going to have some impact, but I don't want to sell illusions to the people. This is going to take months and months and months and probably years in order to move forward and advance to Aleppo or to Idlib. Therefore, people also are waiting and expecting for Trump to come to power again, because his administration, J.D. Vance and RFK, both mentioned Syria twice, that Trump wanted to withdraw and the deep state didn't allow him to withdraw from Syria in the past. And it seems that Trump wants to withdraw from Syria. And that is why Erdogan has taken this decision to go very fast and capture as many territories possible before the time of the compromise. But this has alarmed many, many capitals around the world. Erdogan is, it's very difficult to really make deals with him because he's just like the West. They don't respect the deals. They don't respect the agreements. Under rules-based international order, if you don't have a military power to enforce the agreements, then you will be betrayed. Minsk 1, Minsk 2, Syria, Astana, Sochi, all these agreements are now in the bin, and there has to be new agreements now reached between these different parties.
You know, Ali, I can't help but feel that the particularly the Americans, the outgoing Biden administration, obviously they want to damage the incoming Trump administration as much as they can, as they did after the 2016 election, the origins of the Russiagate scandal that plagued his administration for over 2 years. I can't help but think that people are trying to force issues. And as Kabar just pointed out, I mean, I'm sure all of us remember the hard slug will work to liberate Aleppo. And then in like 36 hours, it was gone. And we're going to have to go through that again. A specific question to you, Ali. I was looking at some of these videos being posted online and social media of HTS, as they call themselves now. They have a lot of sophisticated hardware. I was really surprised. Where does it come from?
Well, I mean, they do have a lot of allies as well. I mentioned to you Turkey. I mentioned Israel. But there are even some American reports which say that some American weapons have fallen into the hands of some of these armed groups, as they say it.
So, well, I mean, it seems to be documented that it was a diverted arms transfer from Ukraine. Keep going.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, various players from which these weapons can come from. But going back to what Kevor was saying, I think that there is going to be a difficulty or challenge for the Syrian military on the ground for various reasons. First and foremost, it was Hezbollah that was instrumental in being the fighting force, the land fighting force, previously during the conflict. Now Hezbollah is in a state of war fatigue. It can ill afford to become heavily involved in Syria once again. Now, the Iraqi, it's true that there are some Iraqi groups coming in, but those are in the few hundreds. It's not clear how much they're going to be able to make a difference, and they are far less battle-skilled, if you would like, compared to Hezbollah. So I think this is going to factor in heavily on how the situation evolves on the ground and whether or not the Syrian government is going to be able to take back those territories which were seized by these armed groups.
So, Stephen, how does this phase end? I mean, is Damascus going to be literally and figuratively under siege? Who's counting on an Iranian intervention of one form or another? Because that's what they want. Okay, they want a strategic defeat for Tehran. They want a strategic defeat for Moscow. Never changes. It's always the same playbook. Maybe different players on the ground. Stephen,
As Kevor and Ali said, Hezbollah today cannot interfere. We might see, yes, Iranian on the ground has to come in, because the Iraqis don't have, as Ali said, they don't have that much training. The Syrian army that's the problem, is the Syrian army after 15 years, they're just tired. It's not because they are a military of a government. They are not a militia. Militia, they can maneuverate easier. We are talking about an army of a country that's been fighting terrorism for 15 years. They've been scattered all over the country, in the east and the south and the north. So we cannot blame the Syrian army, or we cannot put our hopes up so much on the Syrian army, because they did what they can, and they're doing what they can do. Without the help, they are unable to win this war. Without the help of the allies, everyone in Moscow, in Iran, in Iraq, even Hezbollah, whoever needs to pick up the weapon and come and fight. Because if Syria loses, God forbid, they're going to go next to Iraq, then Iran, then and next they'll go country by country. So that is why everyone, if they want to save their own country, they should come and participate and help the Syrian government and fight this terrorism and fight this war to defeat Erdogan. Who's causing this chaos is Erdogan. But at the same time, I do see a change. Like Syria today is, in the middle of when the war started, Syria was alone. It only had Iran on its side and Russia. Now we are seeing politically having big support, and especially Arab country, the Arab League and the Arab countries. So the politics may have a role by pressuring Turkey and pressuring Erdogan. But as I said, in the end, to win this to win what's happening and win this battle, you have to be strong on the battlefield so you can be able to negotiate. in a powerful situation. And I do not see the President Assad is going to sit on the table at this time, especially while Erdogan is putting his conditions. That's not going to happen in Syria.
I don't think anyone's going to sit at the table with Erdogan for a long time. Real quick before we end the program. Netanyahu's gambit in Gaza has failed. Its gambit against Hezbollah has failed. So why will this one succeed?
Actually, we don't know yet how is this going to end. I'm calling my contacts in Syria, and the situation is very dire. And we are hopeful that the front lines in Hama would withstood and withstand this this attack. If Hama crumbles, then this is going to have a tsunami effect on other regions. The Syrian army, as Ali mentioned, it's a state official army. It's not some unit that is that is getting paid to fight. After 15 years of conscription and fighting every day without anything in return. Like, this is not like some military unit or mercenary army which have a professional,
It's not as if they get rotations.
Exactly. And they're not paid.
All right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We've run out of time. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Berlin, Beirut, and Latakia. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, cross-talk rules.